Welcome in, everyone, to the Talking Tide podcast. I'm Chase Goodbread, the sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News, joined by Travis Ryer. We're recapping Alabama's win over South Florida on Saturday night at Bryant-Denny Stadium, 42-16. We'll break it down from top to bottom for you here on Talking Tide on this edition of the Sunday Nighter. And, of course, we will whip around the Southeastern Conference on the back end of the show as we typically do on Sunday night, Travis. 42-16, the final score. If you're a college football fan outside of SEC interest, Travis, and maybe you just are watching crawlers late at night or even Sunday morning, you see that final score, you kind of shrug your shoulders. If you didn't see the game, maybe you don't know how close it was. But how about 14-13 after three quarters? On the night that Saban Field is dedicated with the GOAT in attendance. What about it?
Saban doesn't even coach anymore, and he's tired of South Florida, you know?
That's right. Like, yeah.
They were a big enough pain in the ass last year, and now on his field christening night, USF still doing its thing. It was impressive. Give USF a lot of credit. They signed up for the full 60. That's a quality team. Alex Golish has got that thing headed in the right direction. You figure, especially at the group of whatever, four or whatever it is now, that program should be damn good, right? I mean, The commitment's pretty much there. UCF, USF, they should be the biggest problems that teams have at that level should be those two programs, really, especially with like SMU now in the ACC and some other things that we've seen. So, it was impressive from USF. It was discouraging in some ways for Alabama, but still so much football left to be played. And, you know, some different things that came into play, obviously, during the practice week that could have impacted things for sure along that offensive line. I'm just ready to see this offensive line whole at this point. Can I see it whole
right.
for four quarters? I'd like to see that.
Yeah, waiting on Caden Proctor's season debut as a starting left tackle now. That obviously impacts things. A lot to get into. We'll jump into some individual performances for sure, but just from an overall team perspective, 13 flags for 120 yards on Alabama. Travis, that was huge. Too many of those certainly on the offensive line. We'll hit on that. I've looked at those penalties, those offensive line penalties on the all 22 camera angle here today. I haven't yet looked at all 22 on defense, but I looked at those penalties, got some thoughts for you on those. Couple of touchdowns called back, by the way, on offensive penalties in this one as well. Also, not to be lost, Alabama gave up three fumbles, three loss, one of them on the kickoff to start the second half, one of them from Jam Miller. It was, and of course, Jalen Milroe coughing one up inside the two, in fact, of the South Florida Bulls. So those very costly as well. Penalties and turnovers, no matter who you're playing, those are two great equalizers.
Absolutely. It's like a 3-point shot, you know, to a team that maybe can't match up in most ways, but if they can knock down threes and you're not especially good at running them off the line, guess what can happen in basketball in that regard. But, yeah, certainly a ton of teaching tape for Kalen DeBoer and his staff this week. And, you know, I think in some ways it can be a good thing. I think there's been a little bit of this perception that this team would just cruise through the first three games, even the road game at Wisconsin. But, you know, this is a trip coming up that you can't take lightly, especially when you're coming off a performance that you're probably not all that proud of. So, you know, again, I'll just be interested to see what this team looks like when it lines up against a team like Wisconsin. Some of the defensive concepts that we've seen, sensible against offenses that'll spread you out like Western Kentucky, like South Florida. I don't think Wisconsin's going to look to do that as much.
No, they won't. Caden Proctor again, it's touch and go when he'll play. Of course, he had that left shoulder injury, suffered in pregame before the first game against Western Kentucky, has not played a snap thus far through two games. Maybe he's back against Wisconsin, maybe he's not, but definitely want to see him back at left tackle. Even when he comes back, you got to wonder at this point what the right tackle spot looks like, right? You kind of thought, at least going into the USF game, that Wilkin Formby was somewhat established, but he struggled certainly, especially with a couple penalties, struggled with pass protection here and there. So that battle on, even when Proctor comes back, Travis, I think for the time being, that battle at right tackle is still looking pretty lively.
Yeah, it looked like we had maybe put that in the rearview mirror, but boy, a rough night for number 75. And I feel comfortable in saying that no one understands that more than Wilkin Formby. Sure. He is a guy that does care, and he's a guy that in some ways has had to work extremely hard just to get to this level. Now, he has the physical attributes needed to get the job done, but it was not pretty. I mean, there's just no other way to put it. And with Pritchett in the game in the fourth quarter, you know, I don't know if it was really Pritchett that was dominating all that much. I thought he was fine in the run game. We didn't see enough of him in pass protection to feel like, yeah, he's made some strides maybe. So you could still have those same issues in pass protection. But when Alabama wanted to finish the game on Saturday night with him in there, especially to the right side, they did do some good things with Jam Miller and Justice Haynes down the stretch. I think Jaden Roberts pulling, I think that Barker Brailsford, some of those guys just as much as I do on those kind of runs. But you're right. I don't think there's a whole lot settled where the right side is concerned. And, you know, if this is the week that you run Caden Proctor out there for the first time, it's a pretty interesting environment on the road for a guy who hadn't played in a game in quite some time.
Yeah, a couple of those penalties on the offensive line, Travis, I thought were no-brainers. A couple of them I thought were pretty chintzy. You could pick and choose. You know, to me, the worst flag of the bunch was the deep ball that was completed to Kobe Prentice and got waved off on offsetting penalties. There was a DPI on a Prentice catch if I remember right, was maybe a 53-yard catch. Mm-hmm. Formby gets flagged for holding on that one, and I thought the defender got overextended, kind of fell forward, and had pretty much taken himself out of the play.
He was face planting.
And Formby just kind of shoved him down. I thought
Formby did what they Formby did what they coach offensive tackles to do: bury his ass.
That's
if he's already going down, you bury him, and you don't let him get up. So, yeah, that one I agree. And look, I thought USF got hit with some that were pretty close too, especially one on a big play that came back for USF, but they didn't have a problem, did they, throwing the holds on Saturday night?
A lot of holds. It didn't take much. Geno Vandermark, of course, got the start at one of the guard spots. He got flagged early for a couple of holds. Definitely things that Alabama is going to want to take note of in practice for sure. You hate to see some of those flags come out when the calls are kind of ticky-tack, but at the same time, you got to recognize it as a staff and as a team and get the message across that, look, they're calling everything. If they're calling everything, you got to know you can't do anything. So those are things to keep in mind too.
Yeah, if you're getting your hands outside and kind of across,
yeah,
and you grab a little bit, and look, some of these are right there in space too. You're not, especially at tackle, you don't have the luxury of being kind of in the scrum a good bit. At those tackle spots, a lot of times you're right there in front of everybody, and especially two officials now back there that are looking at that kind of stuff. So, it can happen quite easily. There's no doubt about it. We appreciate, by the way, everyone tuning in here live on a Sunday night. Beano, Southern Red, Buck, we've got No Surfdom checking in. Appreciate each and every one of you folks for doing that, and we'll get to your comments and thoughts as we move throughout the program, Chase, but a lot of the same sentiment that I'm seeing here in the show chat in terms of penalties and mistakes. You know, if you do this an SEC play, or perhaps even this week at a place like Wisconsin, it may not be as survivable as it was Saturday night on your home field against an AAC opponent.
Maybe Beano here is Ramsey Robinson. Who knows?
You know? Might be. Except this is 251. Beano was a Huntsville guy.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Yep. probably not.
Buck didn't like Buck's horrible targeting call on Justin Jefferson, and that's got residual effects because I thought Justin Jefferson was a bright spot.
Yeah.
On Saturday night. Here's what I like about Justin Jefferson. He stones people, you know, and maybe that works to his detriment because the tackle he got called for targeting on Saturday night, 10 years ago, we'd be celebrating that. Mm-hmm. Coaches clinics around the country this next summer, this is how you do it.
Right.
This is how you finish as a tackler. But it's not just how you rotate him in there at inside linebacker either. This is a guy that's a core special teams player that you're not going to have for a half this week up in Madison.
Yeah, 10 tackles for Justin Jefferson against the Bulls. Definitely a career high for him. Like I said, I've done a review of the offensive snaps. Looking forward to taking a closer look at that targeting call when I take a closer look at the defensive snaps. But, yeah, Jefferson was all over the place, no doubt about it. Another big game for Jahad Campbell, led the team with 11 stops. He's had two pretty big games in a row. And what about Tim Keane and Travis? Deep from the interior DL spot, gets 9 stops and 1.5 sacks. LT Overton, the transfer from Texas A&M, with 4 quarterback hurries, which is a big number. So a lot of good things happening on the defensive side of the ball. Let's go ahead and flip over there. South Florida scored 16 points. The defense, in a lot of ways, held it together for this game. They got the job done when Alabama had the turnover on the kickoff to start the second half. They stoned USF on that drive, stopped them a couple other key drives. Now, USF did have a couple of drives that were definitely sustained longer than you would want to see. I know in the first half, Byron Brown, the quarterback for USF, got a lot of mileage shooting right through those A-gaps. Some of it was designed, I think, quarterback draws. Not all of it. Some of it was scrambles. But that guy knows where to go with the football when he's not going to throw it. That's for sure.
Well, and that's where you couldn't let him beat you Saturday night because he is still very much a work in progress from the cup.
Yeah.
15 of 35 in the game throwing the football. You wanted him to throw the football 30-plus times. So you get him over that 30 pass threshold through 28 in Tampa last year. And so you were going to feel good about that. And look, let's be fair to him. I don't really get the sense from his receiver core that he's got anything close to a Ryan Williams or even a Jeremy Bernard or a Kobe Prentice. That team is pretty limited in terms of skill talent other than Naquan Wright. But the Wright and Brown show, if you're Alabama, could not beat you Saturday night. And those two guys still managed to combine for 170 rushing yards. So you didn't exactly hem them up, you know. But you were good enough. You were good enough on third down, 2 of 18 for South Florida, 0 for 2 on fourth. So possession plays were very good to the Alabama defense. And then red zone, man. You force field goals in the red zone, especially in today's game.
Yeah.
That's gold. Those red zone field goals, let them kick all they want.
Big wins, big win. That's why it drives me crazy when, you know, I don't understand why the generally accepted stat for red zone defensive performance is percentage of scores allowed, right? Because a field goal is really a win.
It's touchdown conversion.
So it's touchdowns. That's the only one that matters to me.
When I look at that stat, that's where my eyes go immediately. I don't care if a team's 28 for 28. If they kick 20 field goals,
right?
You know, what's the touchdown conversion rate? You're right. That's all that really should matter. Situational
football. Sure. Yeah. Defensively elsewhere for Alabama, Travis, who else stood out for you on that side of the ball for the Crimson Tide?
Well, I just continue to think this defense is pretty much custom made, it seems like, for a guy like Jahad Campbell, because he can do some different things. You can use him in some different roles. He's well on his way to a 100 tackle season at this rate, but you got to start with Tim Keenan, like you talked about. I mean, that was a war daddy performance, and you kind of been waiting on that, right? For a couple of years, really. Yeah. What? Since Barmore? I mean, all due respect to Fedarian Mathis, Byron Young, those kind of guys that have come through the program in the last 2 or 3 years. Yeah. That was some Quinnen Williams, Deron Payne type of stuff from Tim Keenan. And he put on tape what you need him to put on tape, because if people are going to single or try to single block this guy and he can consistently do what he did, and especially in pass rush, I think that's probably the most surprising aspect of it all, was that, and he sustained, you know, I know they rotate a lot of people, but, and that helps him. That helps a guy like Tim Keenan. But I love that his efficiency, if you go back and break down his snaps and the impact he had on each of those snaps, it's pretty damn high percentage, I would think.
And, you know, it also, if you get something in pass rush out of those interior guys, whether it's Tim Keenan, whether it's a Jaheim Otis, whoever, it makes such a difference in pass pro with how the running backs respond too, when, with the help, right? Because a lot of running backs, they're protecting from, they're looking from inside out, right? They're looking inside first, and then they look outside. Sometimes they're coached to look outside. If you've got a monster like a Will Anderson on the edge, that's different. That's not the same thing. But generally speaking, if a defensive tackle is breaking through and penetrating and pass rush, the back is going to help right up front with that guy. And what's that do? That leaves your Q Robinsons, your Quay Russaws more singled up on the edge.
It does. It does. If you have to manufacture pressure, I do like some of the things, and watching it again, it was pretty basic for Alabama, really, on both sides of the ball in terms of what they put out there and personnel groupings, those type of things. But boy, you don't have to get too fancy if you got a guy on the interior that is just having his way like Tim Keenan had on Saturday. Is that reasonable to expect against, say, Georgia down the road? Probably not. I mean, Georgia guard to guard is going to be elite, but it was still good to see nonetheless. And absolutely, I still say for Alabama defensively, if I'm looking at attacking this defense, it's going to be more perimeter based. I'm still going to get after those corners and that Husky with the quick game. Georgia's going to do that too. And Georgia, if they don't run the ball early, and they may not even come out and try to run the ball early. And I'm way ahead of us now, but I'm just watching Georgia against Clemson. They attack Clemson with the quick game early to the perimeter. Mm. And let's see what your guys on the outside have under their hood. I think Alabama's going to get that a few weeks from now. They've gotten it really to start each of the last two games, first two games. Western Kentucky went out there with the quick game early, and South Florida did it Saturday night.
USF took some deep shots, incomplete, to kind of test it out.
It's a Tennessee offense, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, remember what Hendon Hooker did to Alabama a couple of years ago up in Knoxville?
Wore him out.
And I can see some Hendon Hooker in Byron Brown, especially as a runner. But he hasn't evolved into the kind of passer that Hendon Hooker really became as he moved throughout his career.
All right, offensively for Alabama, Travis, how about Jalen Milroe's performance? He goes 17 out of 27, 199 yards, a couple of touchdowns, no interceptions. He took three sacks from a rushing standpoint. 12 rushes, only 2 net yards. Of course, the sacks that he took ate up a lot of his positive rushing yards. So on the net, he had just 2 yards on the ground on 12 carries. I thought – you know, it wasn't a great game for Jalen, for sure. I think the pass pressure had a lot to do with that. You put certainly some of that on the offensive line. I thought what got things off on the wrong foot for Milroe, no pun intended, and I'll get to why I say that, is because he took some shots below the knees early. When the pass rush got to Milroe, He took some impact down around the ankles, around the knees, got up slow a couple of times. You wondered how much pain he was playing with. Now, you know, when he busts a 74-yard touchdown run that gets called back and he blows away the USF secondary to get there, play like that, you're like, oh, okay, you're right, he's fine. But still, just because he can do that doesn't necessarily mean he's feeling right in the pocket, right? And you know, I thought he was a little jumpy in the pocket, in part because of some of those shots that he took around the ankles and knees early.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt. And look, I don't know many quarterbacks that eventually, if that happens enough from the outset of a game, they're not going to essentially show signs of feeling pressure. And it gets to the point where the defense almost has an extra defender on the field that's not even there, because you start seeing ghost or feeling ghost.
Right.
But I'll give Jalen credit for this. And he got sacked on a play where Formby looked like he get beat by speed again. But Jalen very early on the play was ready to bounce right too. And he kind of ran into a little bit of a sack. I don't think Formby was in great shape regardless, but he didn't help his protection. Jalen, after that, they probably had a discussion about that. You saw Jalen climb quickly, though, up into the pocket and hit some throws after that. The touchdown pass to Kobe down in the red zone. He got himself up into the pocket quickly and kept his eyes up. They tried to run that mesh with the crossers, but it was zone coverage from USF. So it was dead on the crossers. But in running up in the pocket, he kind of stressed the defense in a way that it helped him get Kobe what he wanted behind it. And that turned into a touchdown. He did it before that when he hit CJ Dupree on a third down too.
Right.
So I thought those were positives for Jalen. Was he perfect? By all means, he wasn't perfect, but there's sort of this narrative that gets going. And he still has, he doesn't like to swing it. He doesn't like to go to his checkdowns. He doesn't. His legs are usually his checkdowns. But we've seen Alabama quarterbacks like that in the past. Bryce Young didn't like checkdowns. A&M basically beat Alabama in College Station a few years back, in part because Alabama just wouldn't take checkdowns. I mean, that's what dynamic quarterbacks do. But I did see that a couple times, which I thought was a good thing.
And it goes back, I think, you said at the top of the show, you got to give some credit to the way USF played. They came with some pressures. They came with a lot of help against the run from the secondary, safety stepping up. You know, Alabama, the way they're running their run, the way they do their run game now, you're seeing tight ends a lot of times go weak side to play all the way to play side and try to kick somebody out. That's not easy to do sometimes when the guy you need to kick out isn't anywhere near where you think he's going to be. And USF was moving around, jumping around with that defensive front, bringing a little pressure here and there. I thought the way they schemed it up front kind of took Alabama out of their comfort zone in a lot of ways. There was one play in the first half where Alabama pretty clearly had called what looked to me like a tunnel screen to Ryan Williams. The way the offensive line released, it looks like they were going to go that way. It was to Milroe's left. He takes the snap. He looks over there, sees something he doesn't like, and I'm not sure what it was he saw that he didn't like, but he aborted it right away and just kind of tucked it and got tackled for a short gain, if any gain at all. You could see Ryan Williams a little frustrated.
Wasn't happy. Nope.
No.
In the rewatch, I saw that. Yeah, he wasn't happy. I think that was supposed to be quick game, and I still don't know if that's really something Jalen's comfortable with, because, again, we really did not see that at all last year. Think about how much quick game we've seen, especially in the Saban era. That was part and parcel with the offense. And we didn't really see the quick game at all last year. And we certainly didn't see much of a traditional screen game. And we didn't see really any of that or much of that on Saturday night either. And whereas I think you can kind of wonder if that's going back to the quarterback, well, you got to be coordinated up front too in the screen game. And when you shuffle your offensive line, that's probably an area where you're going to have to compromise or sacrifice a little bit. If you're a pretty good screen team to the back, but you've got three guys playing in different positions now. Hell, Rock Montgomery was even in there at center early on Saturday night.
Parker Brailsford with that helmet issue coming off of once again.
They got different helmets at Alabama than Washington. I mean,
yeah. The first one looked like hands to the face to me that didn't get called.
That'll do it. Yeah.
But not every time. So who knows what's going on there. But Jam Miller ends up 15 for 140 on the ground with a touchdown, broke one late. Alabama in the last 7 to 10 minutes of the game really kind of blew this thing open. Even later than that, there was a touchdown drive that Alabama managed to score just in the time it took for me to get from the press box to the field and with about 2 minutes to go. So they did reach the point where they kind of broke South Florida with the running game. Ryan Williams ends up 4 for 68 with a touchdown. His touchdown reception, I thought, pretty much put the game away. So for all the difficulties Alabama had, they finished it strong.
And the PIs that he attracts. You want to play man coverage against this guy?
Mm-hmm.
And then also, you know, they were able to really elasticize the zone to extraordinary depths because of what he put on tape against Western Kentucky, where WKU was in zone and he still beat it over the top.
Yeah.
You know, you go back and watch the game Saturday night, the corner carried him even with the safety over the top, because they were well aware that this dude can run past it and Jalen can throw it over the top of your zone. So that helped Jeremy Bernard on a couple of those little intermediate throws, because Ryan Williams, with that speed, that true outside ability, he creates space for other people, for other receivers. And where you'll eventually see that maybe too is in the run game, because mm-hmm. of how you have to respect him. And that ability to stretch field. But you're right. The touchdown catch to me was phenomenal because of how quick he got out of the catch and made the move and was gone. You know, it's just not coachable what you saw on that. That was inherited somewhere.
Second week in a row, we've seen him yank his foot out of an ankle tackle too with some strength, right?
He's got
which you wouldn't
play
expect
strength,
from a guy
man.
That only has about, 170 pounds.
And he's not Julio Jones, but that dude, when he has a sniff of the end zone,
mm-hmm.
he has some play strength. There's no doubt about it. Functional strength.
All right, the Talking Tide podcast moving on, Travis. Wisconsin coming up this coming week. We'll get around the SEC here in a minute, but just real quick to touch on this next game for the Crimson Tide. First road game for Alabama taking on the Badgers. And, you know, what jumps out to me about this game, Travis, if we're going to talk concerns for Alabama, is that the position that generally is most negatively affected by road crowd noise is your offensive line. And that's the unit that struggled the most against South Florida. So if you're Chris Kapilovic, the Alabama offensive line coach, you're looking at a busy week, right, to get ready for this game.
Yeah, I guess you could also say, though, that Saturday night it wasn't pre-snap type stuff or false starts, right, as much. It was the holds.
Right.
It was 5 called on Alabama in the game, offensive holds. So, but you're right. That's where I would look for sure, and that's why you would really love to have your offensive line whole. Parker Brailsford's a veteran of road games and a couple different leagues now. So you should be okay with him, I would think, but just, coming out and playing with the poise that's required, you know, and, physically and in terms of just matchups, Alabama should be fine in this game. And it's, again, as far as defending Wisconsin, I don't think there's going to be the challenges that there were, especially at the quarterback position in terms of, the run game, you know, yeah. You're not going to get anything like that. That you're going to get with Wisconsin. So, you know, you get this in second and long, third and long, you're going to feel pretty good about being able to get after the quarterback and, you know, trying to maybe create some more short field opportunities for yourself, like we saw against Western Kentucky.
The Caden Proctor question is coming fast and early for Kalen DeBoer at his news conference tomorrow at the Naylor Soane Room, for sure. People are going to be wanting to know where he's at, quickly as possible. All right, we go around the SEC before we close things out on the Sunday nighter. Travis, I'll rip down a few games of note, and we can just kind of cherry pick what we want to discuss from them. Texas drills Michigan 31-12. They try to plant that flag on the midfield logo in the big house. What? It doesn't quite take. The flag falls on the logo. I thought it was more disrespectful that the flag was covering the logo when it fell, right? I thought that looked worse than if they had gotten the, the flagpole to stick in the ground. I don't know. I'm not sure if you saw the video on that or not. But, yeah, it was not what they wanted to see at Michigan. Go ahead.
Was it Baker Mayfield? Oklahoma went to, like, Columbus and beat Ohio State. And Baker and the boys maybe planted the
Baker planted one. Baker planted one for sure. I can't remember if it was OSU. It might have been. Might have been. If it wasn't OU, maybe. Or if it wasn't Ohio State, maybe. Maybe Texas.
Those blue bloods, they don't like that real good. No, you know, no. When you do that.
It goes unappreciated.
Yeah,
for sure.
That's not appreciated. You may not, you know, your locker room setup may not be all that great if you come back again, you know.
Also unappreciated, Travis, is Cal beating Auburn on the Plains 21-14.
And that wasn't a fluke, good bread. I watched a lot of that. That was not a fluke, and Cal is not very good. Yeah. But I'll say this for Cal, at least they know who the hell they are. You know, I watch Auburn right now, and what Auburn is on offense, you know, it doesn't remind me of Hugh Freeze at Ole Miss.
Right. So
I know everyone wants to throw Peyton Thorne under the bus, but boy, when you can't block Cal, you got problems bigger than even the quarterback position. I'm not saying Peyton Thorne is maybe totally the answer there, but it's rough. It's rough on the Plains right now. I thought Auburn would be a real problem coming up down the road a little bit for Oklahoma at Jordan-Hare. Mm-hmm. I may have to reassess that. Dance.
If I'm not mistaken, Auburn only scored 14 at Cal last year, right? And then they turned later.
It was a pillow fight in Berkeley last year. You know,
turn around the next year.
Cal was missing guys Saturday. Yeah. Cal was missing guys.
Yeah.
And did that to Auburn at Jordan-Hare. Yeah.
Point being for me, I don't want to hear another peep about Hugh Freeze's offensive improvement in 2024 when he scored 14 at Cal in 23, and then he could only score 14 at home against Cal in 24.
Well, you know, he kind of threw everybody else under the bus after the just atrocious performance in the Music City Bowl. I mean, that was Alabama 98 in the Music Bowl, what we saw from Auburn in the most recent Music City Bowl. And yeah. I was recruiting. I really wasn't, you know, running the ship and, you know, overseeing the offense. It'll be different. And then that on Saturday, that's rough.
South Carolina blast Kentucky 31-6. I'm not sure who saw that. The way South Carolina struggled in week one against Old Dominion, I thought, well, they're going to go to Kentucky and get knocked around pretty good. Went the other way around, Travis. Kentucky looked terrible. Offensive line looked bad for Kentucky. South Carolina's offensive line.
Eric Wolford.
Yes.
Eric Wolford back in the bluegrass.
Yeah. Yeah.
They
couldn't protect at all for that quarterback.
I had that totally wrong. I think most people did. I thought that was going to be for Shane Beamer. I thought that was going to be kind of like what we'll probably talk about maybe a little bit with Arkansas coming up.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was going to be that type of thing, except I thought Kentucky would mash South Carolina. And so for Beamer to get that win on the road.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Speaking of which, Oklahoma State beats Arkansas 39-31, the final score. That one goes to double overtime, heartbreaker for Sam Pittman and the Hogs. I didn't get to catch as much of this one as I wanted, Travis, but I know Arkansas let it slip away. I know they blew a double-digit lead, if I'm not mistaken.
They Arkansas did all the things a team that's had the stench sort of permanently put on it and can't get off does in a game like that. And the new quarterback, Taylen Green, the announcers and everybody, if you just look at his stat line, you go, oh, wow. But this guy, in terms of game management and attention to detail, is maybe a 2 or 3 out of 10. Mm-hmm. And if he had just done those things even close to good, I don't think Arkansas loses that game. They also fumbled a punt. I mean, they just did all the things that teams that are beleaguered like that and head coaches who are beleaguered do in a situation like that. It was I thought Bobby Petrino, and look, with Bobby Petrino calling your offense, boy, you're going to get some things that make you go, wow, this guy is, he's like a sorcerer or something when it comes to offensive football. But he, it's like Bobby can't help himself. Even though he knows he shouldn't put the game in the hands of his quarterback in some instances, he's still going to do it.
The shallow cross, he likes. The shallow cross at Bobby
Petrino.
Then
that pick six. Pick six when you're up like, I think it was 14-0 or something like that, and they give up a pick six, and they're going down to score, you know. But Taylen Green, he's a thrill a minute. He's fun to watch, but you're going to lose some football games unless that guy kind of figures it out in terms of management and details.
All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the Talking Tide podcast. Had a lot of fun here on this Sunday nighter. We're going to sign off now. For Travis Ryer, I'm Chase Goodbread, the sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News. We'll be talking to you next time right here on Talking Tide.